Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And welcome back to the Fast Lane. It is 4 o'clock, time for the 4 o'clock fight. A new cast in here today. Brad Thompson and Chris Ranji are out. Reed Lowe, Chris Kerber are in. I'm Brad Barnes. And today we're fighting for a pair of tickets to see Chris Young. He's going to be at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on Thursday, July 11th, with special guest Chris Jansen. For more information and to get your tickets, go to 101ESPN.com. We will welcome in Nate as our fighter today. Nate, how we doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's an honor to be on with you guys. Kerbs, welcome to the show, man.
Great awesome. Call. Thank you very
great
much.
Call. And Randy, he's probably can't hear me, but I've been talking to him for a long time. I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Hey, Brad, do people know that during this Randy, you know, where he goes and hides, where he can't hear, that's when he snacks, like, and he's become such a terrific health nut, like he's eating, like grapes.
Yeah, it's his power-up moment.
And health food.
He's got his Propel water, he's usually got grapes, some kind of protein, power bar, he's always got something.
You good
gotta,
for Randy.
You gotta put that healthy fuel in you, right, Reed?
I probably could use a little bit of that.
I don't think there's enough grapes for your detox, buddy.
I had lots of grapes during the non-detox.
I went into a smoothie store earlier this morning, and I looked in, and they had this little bottle, and it said liver detox pills. It was like some name for it. I'm like, that would be intriguing.
Okay, I should get Lozy a bottle of these.
Get those to Reed, yeah. Get all that beer out of
your system.
You can
still only take one at a time, though.
All right, Nate, if you're ready to rock and roll, we'll get this thing going, man.
Let's bring out the Zamboni, guys.
All right, question number one. Jordan Binnington was named to the NHL's All-Rookie Team. Who was the last Blue to be named to the NHL All-Rookie Team? Was it Colton Parayko, Jake Allen, or TJ Oshie?
Well, let's go with Colton Parayko.
All right, I got the next one for you. I'm going to go to baseball. Before Albert, who was the most recent player to win back-to-back National League MVP awards? Was it Clayton Kershaw, Chipper Jones, or Barry Bonds?
Yeah, Barry Bonds. It's got to be Barry Bonds.
All right. Besides Ryan O'Reilly, who's the only Blues player to win the Selke Award? Rick Maher, Adam Oates, or Larry Patey?
Let's go with... No, Rick Maher.
I would have butchered those names so bad.
Yeah.
And here we go for more butchering. Question number four, Nate. The NHL draft is this weekend. In 1996, the Blues took our own Reed Lowe with the 177th pick. Who did they take with their first pick in that draft? It was 14th overall. Was it Gordy Dwyer, Marty Riesner, or Jochen Hecht?
Hecht. We just went over
I
that.
I know. I got a short memory, man. Hecht.
Let's go with Marty Riesner.
All right. How you feeling, Nate?
50-50.
Well, it's not too bad. I think you're doing better than a lot of people do when they come into the fight.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, but you know, see, that happens. He's feeling 50-50 because he knows what he's up against.
Exactly.
I mean, he's up against, Wiki character here when it comes to sports.
No easy road today. No Ranji, no BT to take. So, Randy, say hello to Nate.
Hey, Nate, how are you?
Hey, Randy, how's it going, man?
Everything's great. Good to have you with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing.
No problem, man. My pleasure.
All right, Randy, are you ready?
Ready.
Nate's feeling 50-50, so think about everybody feels 50-50. That way. 50-50. Question number one, Jordan Binnington, JB. He was named to the NHL All-Rookie Team. Who was the last Blue to be named to the rookie team?
I think I reported this, actually, earlier today. Colton Parayko, 2016.
Listen, they were so worried about Reed and I being the only guys in here. Do you know how many times they told me not to give you the options? I said, you really want to make this challenging on you. I should give you the answer, and you come up with the question. We go Jeopardy style on this thing.
That's a great idea. You know, let's do that. Alex Trebek.
Oh, I so want to do it with this next one, too. I really do, but I won't. I won't. I'll stay within the rules. All right, before Albert, who was the most recent player to win back-to-back National League MVP awards?
Who is Barry Bonds?
Not quite the same as I would have done it.
Besides Ryan O'Reilly, who's the only other Blue to win the Selke Award?
Mickey, Rick Mahar. And one of our all-time favorite. What a great guy he is.
One of the best.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite people.
Question number four, the NHL draft is this weekend. In 1996, the Blues took Reed Lowe, 177th. Who did they take with their first pick in that draft, which was 14th overall?
I think that draft here in St. Louis, the Blues' first-rounder that they forced Keenan to not trade.
Right.
It was Marty Riesner.
We've got a winner. You guys both killed it. Batting 1,000, 4-4. Congratulations, Nate. Tie goes to the listener. It was Colton Parayko, 2015-2016. Barry Bonds, four straight from 01 to 2004. What was the name there, Kerbs?
That'd be Rick Mahar.
There you go. Rick Mahar. And it was Marty Riesner in 1996. Nate, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate that.
Way to go, Nate.
Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one, man.
Nate with us on 101 ESPN, where it's 4:14. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers and officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Chris Kerber is in now. Reed Lowe is here. Kerbs, it is great to have you in studio again. We did a morning earlier in the week, and here we are doing.
Yeah, listen, I want to see if Brett is coachable. See if he can. I wonder if he can say that name under Marty Riesner again, Forrest. Yeah, when he comes back in, I'm gonna ask him that. You know, the thing about Marty Riesner, and Reed, you may know this because you were drafted that same year. You remember the Blues had gone a long time, right, without a first overall pick because Mike Keenan kept trading him away. And the one thing that always sticks out with me with Marty Riesner is the quote from Mike Keenan. If you remember when he traded, I think it was Greer to Edmonton.
Yep, in the Cujo trade.
Right, when people were asking about him, because Greer was in college, he said, listen, our job is to win here in the National Hockey League, not to groom college kids. And then with the first round draft pick that the team had in years, he took a college kid.
Yeah.
Is kind of the story and how that went in some of the pinball mind frame of Mike Keenan.
Marty Riesner's a great guy. I played with him for a long time. Love that guy.
Yeah, he was, and he ended up having a pretty doggone good career.
Real good career with Edmonton. Played a lot with the Oilers, was a faceoff specialist, and killed a lot of penalties. Another great job by a guy that came into the NHL as a Hobey Baker winner. Yeah, won the Hobey Baker in Boston College. Was one of the best players out there. Came in as a touted player that was supposed to be a top six forward and ended up having the longevity of his career being a defensive forward because he knew what he had to do to change his game in order to stay there. So good on you, Marty.
Hey, is the number 22 for the St. Louis Blues in maybe in a different, like number seven? A lot of the greats have worn number seven. The Pat Maroon wore it with great pride this year.
Yeah.
But that number 22 has had some good numbers with Ricky Mahar and Jorgen Pettersson and Shattenkirk. That number 22.
Turbo Craig Conroy.
Well, Brett, listen, the last guy to score 40 goals prior to Tarasenko for the St. Louis Blues wore it, and Brad Boyce.
Yeah, that's right.
He had 76 goals over a two-year period.
Yeah, he lit it up.
It's a good call. Next up in the fast lane, Albert Pujols back in town. Give us a player that you were thrilled that you got a chance to see in person in your lifetime. Use the mic drop feature with the 101 ESPN app. We want to hear from you next on 101 ESPN. That's the first of our mic drops at 101 ESPN and with the 101 ESPN app. Chris Kerber, Reed Lowe in with Randy Carricker. And we want to know what player you are thrilled you got a chance to see in your lifetime. Lozy, let's start with you. Who is it that you played with, against, saw from the stands? Who's the guy?
I never got to see Wayne Gretzky play, and I almost had a ticket to his final game. I was playing in Worcester, Massachusetts at the time, and I was the fifth guy on the list that got four tickets. I was not the rookie, but I had the least amount of games of the guys that got a chance to go. So he's the best, right? And so I never got to see him play live. I obviously seen him playing on TV a bunch, but never got to see it live.
Kerbs.
You know, I was thinking about this question, and for me, it was about guys who I kind of became fans of. So, you know, for me, outside of all the Cardinals and stuff, but I finally got to see Peyton Manning, albeit towards the end, but I got to see Peyton Manning. First time I got to see Jim Tomey, I was thrilled and loved watching him play. And then probably the most recent one was when I finally went and made sure that I got a chance to see Larry Fitzgerald play. I wanted to see Larry Fitzgerald in that Cardinal uniform playing wide receiver.
That's pretty awesome. Let's get to your mic drops on 101 ESPN. Here's our first.
Best player I ever saw live was Kurt Warner whenever he was playing with Phoenix, and was able to take my dad to see a Rams game. Matt Meinhardt got injured in the first half, and Kurt Warner came in and continued to kick our butt, which made my dad thrilled. It was the only time he was able to see Kurt Warner play before my dad passed away.
And boy, that's a great question, though, Randy. Do you want to see Albert hit one out tomorrow?
Yeah, I think I do. He wants to hit
one
out.
Think about that question there. I know you want. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be at the game. Christy and I are going, right? And, like, oh, man. I mean, you're two games out of first place. Do you want to see him go yard?
Considering we don't have a correction line on this at the end of this, I thought the question was who you hadn't got to see. Can I do mine over again quick?
Yeah.
So, the best thing that ever happened to me is seeing my hero. I got to play against him. My first year in St. Louis, Steve Yzerman took the faceoff instead of the fourth line centerman, and I'm standing there on the faceoff draw, and I idolized Yzerman because everybody loved Gretzky and Lemieux, and Yzerman won what was the trophy before? It's called Ted Lindsay. The Lester B. Pearson Award for most valuable player voted by the players. He got that the year Gretzky had 215 points and 163 assists, and Yzerman had 155 points, and he was second in the league in scoring. But we're standing on the faceoff dot. I'm looking across, and he's right there. And I must have just had the biggest smile on my face because he looked over at me, smiled, and he gave me a wink. And I was like,
and then you lost the draw.
And then we lost the draw.
That's great.
So there. Sorry, I got the question wrong. No, my bad. But
here's our next mic drop.
No. Ken Griffey Jr., greatest player I ever got to see back in the 90s when I lived in Seattle. Leaping Kingdome walls to steal home runs, hit home runs in 8 straight games, still a record. Beautiful swing, roam center field like nobody's business. Great hitter, greatest baseball player of my lifetime. Ken Griffey Jr.
Randy, was he the most perfect baseball player ever?
Yeah, I think because he was just so smooth. The mic dropper used the word natural, and he really was. The swing, the ability to run the bases. And I'm glad he talked about Seattle, because the Seattle Griffey was different than the Cincinnati
Very
Griffey.
Very much so.
For sure. And they came in here one time with Seattle, and the way he roamed the outfield, he was born to be a ball player. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
You know what the best thing with Griffey, from my memory, was watching him in the home run derbies when he had his hat on backwards and he was just there, and just pluck him out of the park. And you're just like, is he ever going to stop? Like, he was just awesome, man.
He was terrific. Here's another mic drop for you.
Bob Gibson, best player to ever see. I watched him pitch 64 and 67 World Series. Mark McGwire was number 2 at the way he hit home runs. And Pujols would be my number 3 guy, just watching him develop from his rookie year into the player that he became.
I don't know that, and I never got to see Gibby in his prime. I got to see him towards the end of his career. I don't think that I've ever seen anybody as dominant as he was, as that pitcher that guy got to see in 64 and 67.
But if you're seeing it, I just gave you my Porky Pig, by the way. If you... even towards the tail end, though, like when I brought up Peyton Manning, and he wasn't anything quite what he was before, although having said that, he turns around and ends up winning that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? But we still know that he wasn't the player that he was at that one point. I still thought it was cool just to see him in the uniform playing and performing. Even if it's at the tail end.
To know that you did and have that in your mind's eye is very cool. Here's another mic drop on 101 ESPN.
I got to see Big Mac live hit one of his home runs during his magical 70 home run season, which was amazing. And then, you know, I got to see Albert play, of course. But being in the stadium for Big Mac during his home run chase, I was a little kid. I was at the most 12, probably less than that, but it was awesome, and I'll never forget it.
Boy, that's great.
Put that into perspective for you, okay? He was a little kid watching Big Mac hit those home runs out, Randy. Yeah. You know, you actually now,
years ago.
You have to turn, when you think that what Ozzie Smith's last year was 96,
yeah.
You actually have to sit down with some younger kids and say, I want to show you some videos of a guy.
When Ozzie,
because they're not going to remember him having played.
Right. When Ozzie goes to speak at middle and grade schools, he takes a DVD of his highlights with him. Because you're exactly right. Kids don't know. We have one left here on 101 ESPN.
The one player that I saw that always will stick with me is Henry Aaron. And especially watching him that last year as he was approaching the home run mark.
That would that'd be a great memory to have. And I never saw him play in person either. And we do have one more mic drop.
Back when I was a kid at the Edward Jones Dome, I remember, gosh, I don't even remember how old I was, but it was when Brett Favre was visiting with the Packers to play the Rams. I was at that game whenever he broke that passing yard milestone, and I will never forget seeing him. I also got to see Randy Moss play in the Edward Jones Dome with the 49ers right before he retired, so that was pretty special to me as well.
All great, unbelievable experiences that people got to have. For me, and it's because we don't have an NBA team, seeing Michael Jordan play in Chicago, and arguably the greatest ever, but the Bulls won 72 games that year. They went 40-1 at home, and I saw their loss.
No.
Dan Marley hit a three-pointer.
Now, I also put down a list of who I hadn't seen that I really wish I had, and Michael Jordan was on that list. Now, I saw Michael Jordan play baseball.
Oh, yeah.
But I did not see him play basketball. And then the other one because the list for those that you wanted to see but did not see, Randy, I got to think, considering all the sports that you've been to and covered, is probably not that long.
I'm going through my list here because I got to see Rice and I got to see Montana, and I've seen from 1980 on, I've seen pretty much everybody in the NHL, the NFL, and Major League Baseball. So the ones that I've missed out on have been the NBA. I've had the fortunate opportunity to see LeBron and Jordan play in person. But obviously never got to see Magic in a regular season game. Never saw Bird play. So it'd be NBA ones that I missed out on.
Bo Jackson for me is the one and even when I still watch highlights today,
whatever
I'm
sport.
Like, I wish I would have watched. I've had a chance to watch that guy play live, and I never did see him play.
I want to watch him break his bat in half and not the little end either. He never went after the little end.
We did get one late mic drop. Here it is.
Player I was really excited to see actually was Scottie Pippen when he was in college. It must have been 1983, and Central Arkansas was playing Southeast Missouri State. Scottie went off for like 43 points. My dad said, you better go get that guy's autograph. He's going to be famous. And sure enough, within another couple of months later, he was drafted in the NBA and went off to NBA stardom. So Scottie Pippen.
It's a pretty cool memory seeing Scottie Pippen in college too.
I bet.
So, and for guys that played for your home team, think about how lucky we have been here with Warner and Falk with the Rams, to see Gretzky and Hull with the Blues.
And two, McInnes and
Pronger. All Hall of Famers. And then obviously for older people to see Gibson and Brock in their prime, and I got to see a lot of Lou, but then to see Albert and to see Scott Rolen, who a lot of people think is the best defensive third baseman of all time. We've been lucky here to see a lot of really top-notch athletes, the best that have ever playing for our home teams.
Well, and throw in the old football Cardinals.
Yeah.
And some of the players, whether it was Otis Anderson and some of the other greats that have played along those kind of lines. I mean, from a St. Louis athlete perspective, we really have had an unbelievable chance to see some greats in a sport.
If you're going to put together an all-time offensive line, a three deep offensive line. Both Orlando Pace and Dan Dierdorf are going to be on it.
Yep.
At least on the third team. So it's been pretty good.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Really impressive.
Coming up next in the Fast Lane, get your text into the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Curbs and Losey and I will have the Sports Six Pack next on 101 ESPN. We do appreciate your texts to the Hot Shot text line, 65780. Chris Kerber is here. Reed Lowe is here. BT and Ronj out today. But Big Sizz is here with your questions for us. Big Sizz, take it away.
So we were talking about it, Randy, earlier today, but some information came out. Albert apparently received an offer from the Cincinnati Reds before taking the one with the Angels. How would his career have been different if he would have went to Cincinnati instead?
He would have hit a lot more home runs in the early part of this contract that he's in because of the ballpark. But the back end would have been even rougher than it has been. With the plantar fasciitis, his legs were breaking down here. So I think without the DH, that he would have had a real rough go of it in the back 5 years of this contract.
That move that he made because of the length of contract, he had no choice, and he had to know it, that he had to go where he could be a DH.
Yeah.
For sure.
And he said that in the story, too, that everything worked out best for him, for the Cardinals, and the Angels because of the presence of the DH in the American League.
Yeah.
So this texter points out, Pronger, in the Hall of Fame, when is his number going to be retired by the Blues?
It's a good question. They haven't had a guy that wore it since he left. Jason Arnott wore it, right?
Daryl Sador, I think. Both did. It'll happen.
Yeah, it'll happen for sure.
I don't know when, right? Yeah. But at some point in time, it will happen. The question is not when will Pronger's number go up into the rafters. The question is, whose would be next?
After 44. I think you have a wait.
I think you have a TBD, don't you?
Yeah.
Not a BVD, a TBD.
Yeah. I would say so.
I don't know that there's anybody else in line right now.
No, it might be a current player.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good thought. By the way, I don't know how this works in the NHL, but the fact that Prongs is currently employed by the Panthers would I don't know if you
no
you can do that.
Yeah, you can do that. You know, there are some there depending on the team and the organization that you go through. And you remember a couple of years ago when you were part of the committee too, and we were looking at how do we start a Hall of Fame, that kind of thing, or Ring of Honor, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reality of it is like a guy like Nomar Garciaparra, his number can't be retired by the Red Sox when you can make the case that it should, because you actually have to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
So they have each team's criteria is a little bit different on how that gets determined.
And that's where the Cardinals are now too. That you don't get it retired until you make it, or you're obvious like Tony was to go into the Hall of Fame.
Wow, that's insane. I didn't know that.
The NHL draft this weekend. Reed, I know you've got to have a good story about your draft experience.
I told this one earlier, but I was in Saskatchewan, Canada, where I'm from, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. The legal drinking age is 19 years old. I was a little bit of a late bloomer, so I made the Western Hockey League as a 19-year-old after playing 2 years at Tier 2. So my birthday is June 21st, tomorrow, and that draft year, 96 here in St. Louis, fell on a Friday, my birthday, Saturday, draft day. So I go out with all my friends on Friday night. Never been to the bar before. I wasn't the guy to break rules. So it's the first time I've been to the bar. Apparently, there was a lot of tequila. There was a lot of lack of memory, and I'm not sure what time I went to bed. But I get at 2 o'clock the next afternoon, no cell phones or nothing. My dad brings the cordless phone up to me and says, hey, it's your agent. He's on the phone. And I'm like, Dad, I can't talk to anybody right now. I'm going to have to call you back. So about 3 hours later, I got out of bed, called my agent back. He's like, yeah, you got drafted by the Blues, 177 overall. I was like, yay. You got any Advil?
Oh, good. So what you're trying to say is your draft experience might be some like the Blues parade experience in some ways,
it
huh?
Was. The night before, yeah.
At one point, and I was well into my broadcasting career before I figured out, why do I ever get upset when the Blues don't get a guy that I want? I've literally never seen any hockey player that got drafted before he got drafted, ever.
Ever.
In my life.
That's why people say you're going to watch a draft. I'm going to pay attention. The draft was in Boston, and nobody from the American League from a broadcaster standpoint had moved up to the National Hockey League. And the Coyotes were kind enough. We were affiliated with the Coyotes at the time in Springfield, and the Coyotes were kind enough to invite us. So we go to the draft, and I see Mark Sauer coming up from the table. And I had met him once real briefly before when he'd come into our building with Larry Plow, because we were only 45 minutes away from you there at Reed and Worcester.
I remember.
And so Mark Sauer comes up. I said, what the heck, be bolder, go home. So I stopped him right on the concourse. Now I'm 5'10". He's 5'4"?
Yeah, at least.
Okay, so I'm pretty much nose to sternum. And I stop him, and I said, what's it going to take to work for the St. Louis Blues? And he says, what'd you get your degree in? I said, marketing. He said, from where? I said, Miami of Ohio. And he said, you want some advice? He goes, yeah, quit. He goes, why in the hell would anybody want to be a broadcaster? Somebody working for Procter & Gamble would be more valuable to me than you would be. And I, okay, so I go to interview for the Blues job. He comes into the room, Jim Woodcock. I said, oh, we've met. And he goes, oh, we have? I said, oh, yeah, in Boston, you gave me some advice. He goes, oh, no, what was it? I said, you told me to quit because someone working for Procter & Gamble would be more valuable to you. He goes, oh, no. I said, listen to me. I go, if it was a marketing job, I'd agree with you, but I wouldn't want one of those pencil pushers calling my hockey games. He goes, fair enough, and he walked out of the room.
Curbs, in all your years of broadcasting, Randy, you can definitely add in on this too. Have you ever had an issue where you've said something during a game and maybe have been called out by a player about what you said about them? Or how do you balance that to where you're not being attacked?
That's a great question. Okay, so I have two rules of broadcasting. Learned two rules of broadcasting. One is you never say anything on the air you wouldn't say to a guy's face. Plain and simple. There's no microphone tough guy. The second one is critique the play, not the player. As soon as you critique the player, you're getting into personal stuff that you just don't know. You don't know if somebody's mom is sick, if they just got a diagnosis. You don't know if a daughter or son was up late. So those are the rules. Here's how you learn that. I'm in the East Coast Hockey League broadcasting a game against the Nashville Knights. And at that point in time, Phil Roberto was our head coach. Mm-hmm. He took the captaincy off of a guy by the name of David Duvall. And
he became a great golfer, by the way.
Yeah, different Duvall, but close. Yeah. Okay. And took the C off of him, right? And I said, well, it's been a tough week for this guy. He had the C removed, and his ice time has been cut down. All right. Now, again, stating fact, you could look at the guy in the eye and say that. His girlfriend translated that English into German, meaning he sucks. So girlfriend calls afterwards, says, oh, whoever's doing your game said you suck on the air. They turn around, and I get down there, and I'm not kidding you, because he was another 6'6" guy, and I hadn't really filled out the way I've filled out now. Okay, so he literally picks me up, and he's got me pinned up against the side of the bus.
Wow.
And just letting me have it, and put me down. Well, eventually I put all the tapes in the center. Here's my tapes. You hear me say that, I'll apologize to you. Until then, I'm not saying your name on the air. And so for the next 2 weeks, anytime he touched the puck, I said Birmingham had the puck. I wouldn't say his name. Phil Roberto pulls us into his office. He goes, it ends now. I said, no, I don't need to say his name the rest of the year. Fine with me. And he made David Duvall apologize, and then I started saying his name again on the air.
Good for you. Yeah, and that's the biggest issue that you have in broadcasting is that families will say to the athlete what they heard, but what they heard wasn't necessarily what you said. And
right.
I've had that a couple of times. And the athlete does confront you, say, I would ask, Tom Pagnozzi had an issue with me sometime. And I said, what did you hear? And he said, well, my friends heard it. I said, what did you hear? And he said, well, no, somebody told me about it. And I said, well, I can get you the tape so that you can hear it. And he said, oh, don't bother. And then I told him what I said. And don't bother.
Reed, so. You were involved, real quickly here, you were involved in one, okay? There was a situation, Quenville's the head coach, and there was a situation where anybody says, this guy needs to fight this guy in the next shift, all right? And Randy, you and I might have even been doing the doggone postgame show at the time. And I know Hadley was too with us, and everybody was on you about not fighting in this situation. And John went off. Now, I still to this day give John credit because John showed up to the rink the next day and you and him went into a room. And
the way he tells the story is awesome.
Right? You went into the room and because you were, but I went to you afterwards And I said, listen, here's what everybody's saying. This is even what my partner Chaser is saying. What happened? And you're like, dude, I wanted to fight the guy. But Quenville tapped me on the back and said, get out there and don't start anything. And this was your first or second year, right? Second or third year. And you said, look, what am I supposed to do? The coach told me not to do anything, and I want to keep playing.
And it's funny because he came in and he knew that he had called me out, and I was going to be looking for him. And it was my second year, and we were back. We were still in the
rink in Chesterfield.
The rink in Chesterfield, yeah. And I said, John, I said, let's go in this room over here. And he's looking at me like, oh, this is going to be bad. And he called me into a separate room, you know. And I just went in there, and I was real polite. And I said, just listen. I said, you don't understand the situation. I said, you want to report something? Get the facts from me or from Joel Quenville to find out what's going on. I said, because at the end of the day, have I fought enough in the last 10 or 15 games? Is that the question or is that not the question? That's not what you said. So just make sure you get it right next time with me. And I even tell him to this day, it kind of put a spitfire on me because I went out and started getting after it again because, you know, maybe I wasn't fighting as much as I should have been because I was getting a little bit more ice time at the time. I was up like 9 minutes and it was right at the beginning of the season.
Yep.
And the fights just kind of weren't coming for me. And then Joel started to kind of pull me back a little bit and wanted me to play a little bit more. And so it was just a little bit of a miscommunication. But at the end of the day, I did tell him, you know, I took a re-look and a look in the mirror to make sure that I was doing my job right, because Al Tour, back when I was in junior, I was playing on the first line and I stopped fighting. He put me back on the fourth line. I went to his office. I said, Al, I got goals. I'm doing my thing. I'm playing well. You know, he's like, Losey, when's the last time you've been in a fight? I'm like, oh, I don't know, a few games. He's like, you got to dance with the chick that brung you. Nobody cares if you're scoring goals if you're not fighting, right? So, again, I learned there, you know, and then my rule is with radio and with papers, never get in an argument with a guy that orders his ink by the barrel or talks in a microphone for a living.
We had the conversation about athletes that you loved that you got to see, athletes maybe you didn't get to see. Where does Tiger rank after watching him last year?
That was pretty cool. That was great. I was thrilled that I got a chance to see him.
And even that's better, that's a solid second for me, you know, just watching him and just seeing those crowds move in like B settings, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like he's coming up number three there or number two, getting ready to go to number three, and there's people climbing trees and like it's off the charts watching a golf tournament that guy's in.
And made even better because he was in contention.
Yeah, for right. sure. That definitely
it wasn't just going to watch him. He was actually in contention.
And of the current Blues players on the current roster, who do you think has the best chance at a media career in the future? Maybe a sports talk future.
On the Blues current roster.
It's funny, when we've had Carlo Koliakovo on, he was just so obvious. You knew that he was going to wind up in this business.
Chris Thorburn, I think, has a chance.
Yeah. And he did a good job with you when Joey couldn't be there in the playoffs. He did a game with you.
Nervous as all heck he was. I mean, he got the microphone caught up in that beard. We thought we were going to have to cut it out like you had to cut the gum out of your kid's hair when it gets stuck in there. But Chris Thorburn has a pretty good chance. And you know who one of the most talkative guys is? And I love talking with him, is Carl Gunnarsson.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
I don't know if they got talk radio over there in Sweden, but... You know, he pulled me aside real quick. He pulls me aside. This is in Dallas. We're in between games. We had home ice. We're in between games 3 and 4. Hey, Kerbs, what's going on? Nothing. He goes, hey, there's something I wanted to ask you. And he goes, what's that? And he goes, what's with this ham guy on KMOX? And I went, are you kidding me? We went from that to then he goes, then he's talking. He goes, and this guy, Creepy Joe, that's about to go run for president. I go, yeah. He goes, I watched some of those videos. That's a little weird. Next thing you know, I'm learning about parliamentary and the 8 different governmental parties in Sweden. And I'm sitting there going, I walked out of there and went, what the hell just happened here? This is with Carl Gunnarsson.
You know, the interesting thing is, if you would have asked me 8 years ago who the Cardinals would be, Brad Thompson and Chris Duncan would have been way down the list of guys that I thought had the potential to be really good broadcasters. And obviously both of them wound up being really good. So you never know. And sometimes it's the quietest guys that have the great sense of humor. Losey, we knew that Hey, the tough guys are always good with the media, right?
You have to be. You have to be good with everything that's not on the ice. You got to be a good teammate. You got to be okay to be a healthy scratch. You got to be.
Yeah. So a guy like Joel Edmondson, you know, he's a.
Oh, yeah.
He can talk and he knows what's going on. So he would be interesting. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. Next up in the fast lane, from free agent decisions to new contracts, the Blues won't have much time off in the next few weeks. We'll break it all down next on 101 ESPN. It is amazing how quickly you get into the silly season, the contract season for hockey. We are 12 days away from free agency. The NHL draft is tomorrow. The Blues, we asked Tom Stillman yesterday about the press conference for Craig Berube. They've got to take care of that. I'm sure it's a fait accompli, but they just have to officially take care of their interim head coach and make him the full-time head coach officially.
Make it official. I think Joe Vitale took care of that during the parade.
I think so.
he did.
Yeah. So Berube, and then the contract with Jordan Binnington is uncharted water in the NHL. I don't know where they go here. And hey, they have a better idea of what they have than I do. And I know that they know how they feel about him better than I do. So I don't know. If you go with John Gibson, who was drafted in the same draft as Binnington and won a Stanley Cup, really good goalie, he got an 8-year, $51 million deal from Anaheim. Or is Binnington more inclined to go with a bridge deal so that he can go with the massive increase in the salary cap in a couple of years so that he can take advantage of that? I don't know.
There's another comparable. There's another comparable here, and it's Antti Niemi.
Mm-hmm. Good
so
call. Yeah.
Antti Niemi won the Stanley Cup in his second year with the Blackhawks. That was 2010. He was born in August of 93. All right. So that puts him, you know, what 93-03. So that puts him right just 2 years older.
Right.
Right than Jordan Binnington. Okay. What he did, he ends up going to arbitration. And remember this scenario. Now, I don't think the Blues aren't going to let this happen. So, but in terms of a contract comparable, I think they awarded him somewhere in that $4 million range. If I remember, I got to go back and look that up. I'm pulling that part out off the top of my head. And it might be on Cap Geek somewhere, his numbers. But I thought they awarded him somewhere in that $4 million range. And the Chicago Blackhawks decided to walk from that. Which they have the right to do. And so they decided to walk, and Antti Niemi went to San Jose and, you know, never recovered, obviously, the same form there. But he becomes a real intriguing comparable because there's not much of a history in terms of prior play on his resume in the NHL.
Yeah, and I think that for me, when I look at the contract that's comparable, it's what the Blues did when they tried to make Jake Allen feel like he was the number one goalie after they traded Brian Elliott in the for a second-round draft pick, and just said, hey, listen, in a time when Jake Allen had lots of potential and had had glimmers of being a starting goalie, but had never really captured it for a full season, not when Halak was here or when Elliott was here, there was always a back and forth where those guys would actually make themselves the number one goalie at one point in time during the season, and they turn around and give him a $17 million contract over 4 years. So are the Blues apt to do that now that they have a guy that wants that? That's really the comparison that I bring, is the Blues have already given a guy, you know, $4-4.5 million a year that's kind of in that middle-aged goaltender, give him a good amount. It's not the 6 or 7 some of them are getting right now, and it's not the 2.5 to 2.75 that you'd get for that borderline starter goalie.
The rate has gone up since that signing was done. And then you've got the Stanley Cup aspect of this in there. And, you know, keep in mind with Jake Allen is, while his cap hit is, right around 4.75 or somewhere in there, this is the year he bumps up to where his actual salary is just over 5 in there as well. So it is, you have the two comparables. You have the, obviously, your own salary structure of your team, and then the league-wide ones, and then you look at history. It's going to be interesting because he is arbitration eligible.
Who is the highest-paid goalie in the league right now?
Is it Carey Price?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's making ridiculous money.
That's not number one goalie money. That's superstar
money. I think he's got 8 years still.
Starting this year?
Yeah.
Starting this year, maybe? Yeah. Or this was year one of that at like 10 or 11 a year? And I'm going to tell you right now, if that happens, you walk.
Yeah. And in the top five, by the way, is Corey Schneider, who went a calendar year without winning a game and makes $6 million a year for 4 more years.
And this is, listen, this is the real challenge for Doug Armstrong, guys, is because the couple of contracts that you say are bad, the Yuri Laterra one, for example, he was able to get out from underneath, okay? Alexander Steen, I don't look as a bad contract. You know, he's got two more years left at that deal, all right? But he was a key piece to helping you win a Stanley Cup, and some contracts are going to have to go along to have that. So Doug Armstrong really hasn't had many, quote-unquote, bad contracts. How he handles a successful team, as you know, when values go up because you can say a Stanley Cup champion, is going to be a real interesting part of cap management moving forward.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, if you're somebody who likes to keep with new trends, do us a favor and do not. That's next before Teoli on 101 ESPN.